From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. COVID cases are surging in Illinois. Last week, on Thursday, we hit an alarming milestone, more than 11,500 new cases of COVID-19. That's the most in a full year since last fall, a time before vaccines were readily available. Hospitalizations have also hit a 10-month high, and according to Governor J.B. Pritzker, it's the unvaccinated who are driving the surge. As it stands, about 1 in 4 eligible Illinoisans remain unvaccinated. Here's Pritzker last week.
Hospitalizations are going up, and there hasn't been a worse level of sickness anyway so far among those hospitalizations. It's just mostly unvaccinated people, and so it's unclear, is Omicron attacking people who are unvaccinated more often than they are vaccinated people? I believe that's the case, because that seems to be the case with everything else about this disease.
The surge is being driven by a confluence of factors we already know well: colder weather driving people indoors, gathering with friends and family for the holidays, and disappointingly low uptake on vaccines. But now there are new questions about a newly discovered variant, as we just heard from the governor, Omicron. While the Delta variant is still here in Illinois, health officials believe it's likely that Omicron has already arrived as well. And as scientists and officials rush to learn more about the variant, here are a few of the questions about Omicron to which we still do not have definitive answers. Is it more transmissible than previous variants? Is it less transmissible than previous variants? Does it lead to more severe disease? Does it lead to less severe disease? Do our current vaccines provide good protection? Do our current vaccines provide worse protection? I should note that WHO's chief scientists said Friday that Omicron appears to be very transmissible, but we're still waiting on a more definitive statement. And because we want to avoid speculating about that which we do not know, we thought this would be a good opportunity for what you might call a Virology 101 refresher. So joining us now is Christopher Brook. He's an associate professor of microbiology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Chris, welcome back to the 21st.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me again.
And listeners, our lines are open for this segment, 800-222-9455. We want to know, are you worried about Omicron? Are you worried about COVID in general? Or are you done with this pandemic, regardless of what the numbers say? There does seem to be that attitude out there as well. 800-222-9455 is the number to call. 800-222-9455. So, Chris, what can you tell us about what we know so far about Omicron's changes, right? We're hearing a lot of talk about mutations and spike proteins and you know, 30 changes. Can you break some of this down for us?
Sure. I think the most important part to start with is the point that you already made, that there's still a lot we don't know about how this variant is going to behave relative to the Delta variant that's already, you know, very widespread here in the state and across the world. But the reason that this particular variant really alarmed a lot of people when it was first discovered and announced by scientists working in South Africa was because it really does have this highly unusual large number of mutations that kind of set it apart from other variants of concern like Delta or Alpha. And including this, 30 plus mutations within the spike protein, which is the part of the virus that it uses to get into and infect cells. A lot of those mutations were sort of known to researchers and sort of gave cause for concern, because some of them had been implicated in enhancing the transmissibility of earlier variants. And then several of them had been shown in laboratory experiments to make the virus less sensitive to inhibition by the antibodies that our bodies, our immune system makes when we've either been vaccinated or previously infected. And so this combination of mutations associated with enhanced transmissibility and potentially more immune escape really got people to very quickly start paying attention.
Okay, I want to play a voicemail we got this morning. Let's take a listen to this.
Hi, my name is Ben Calderon. I'm a student at the University of Illinois, and I currently have COVID-19. So I heard that South Africa was the first one to detect the Omicron variant, but it wasn't the first place to have it. It was already all over Europe when it was discovered. And with us heading home a week ago for Thanksgiving, then coming back, and us being right next to a big travel hub of Chicago, do you think it's likely that me and a bunch of people that I know, especially in my apartment, that all have COVID right now, have Omicron? Because I know the university has a 95% vaccination rate, but it seems that cases are continually going up.
All right, Chris, any response? And I should say, Ben, thank you for sending that in. Chris, any response to that?
Well, yeah, first off, I'm sorry to hear that you're feeling bad, Ben. I hope you feel better soon. I can't really speak for, you know, what particular variant Ben has. I'd say most likely it's the Delta variant, because that virus is still highly widespread across the country. Ben's point was absolutely correct, that this Omicron variant was first detected in South Africa, because South Africa has a really world-class community of virologists and people who are sequencing viruses and analyzing them very quickly. It had absolutely been circulating in many other countries, at least at low level, prior to that announcement. And so the South African scientists really did the world a huge service and kind of bringing that to everyone's attention. We still don't know the sort of prevalence of Omicron in the United States at this point, or in Chicago specifically. You know, there's going to be a little bit of a lag. As we sequence more cases, we'll get a better handle on it. And I should say that the sequencing capacity in the United States is much improved versus where it was a year ago. So we have a much clearer picture of what variants are circulating. But I think that the point is that while Ben may or may not have been infected with the Omicron variant, the Delta variant, which is still circulating, is concerning enough. It has significantly elevated transmissibility over the previously circulating variants and has shown an increased ability to infect people who've been vaccinated. You know, the important distinction here is that it's typically not causing severe illness in those who've been vaccinated, but it's clearly a little bit better able to infect vaccinated individuals. And that's what's been driving a lot of the surge amongst the highly vaccinated population at the University of Illinois. Most likely that will continue with as Omicron becomes more prevalent.
Because even though the vaccines protect against severe disease and hospitalization really well, infection, that the protection against just getting infected, though, that wanes over time. Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Gail is calling from, is it Jerome? Gail, thank you for calling in.
Hi, yeah, Brian. I appreciate your wanting to hear my opinion. I am so tired of hearing about this. We can't go an hour. We can't even go an hour without hearing about it. And I am fully vaccinated, boosted. I only know a couple of people that are unwise enough not to be. But I don't know why we have to have it crammed down our throat constantly. It's the only thing seems to be getting on the news. And there's so much more out there that I only listen to NPR. That's my news source. But I can't even hardly turn the radio on anymore.
Yeah, it certainly is all over the news. Gail, can I ask you, Gail, do you feel comfortable going out in the world? Are you eating in restaurants, doing things like that, or are you still nervous about the virus?
I'm not nervous about it. I'm very cautious. No, I don't eat in restaurants. I haven't since, I think I ate in three since this all started, and that was when we really were more comfortable before the Delta. I like eating outside. If I do go, I wear a mask everywhere. I'm not in the public a lot. I'm very fortunate. My lifestyle doesn't cause me to have to be. So, yeah, I'm real cautious, and my 89-year-old mother is very cautious. We're protective. But I just think driving this constantly, but it's almost the whole consumption of the news. And I think it's unfortunate. I listen to the news to learn other things.
All right. Well, Gail, we thank you for sticking with us here on the 21st, even though we are talking about this subject you are done hearing about. And I appreciate you taking the time to call in. Maybe this is just one of those things, Chris, where Gail and I will have to agree to disagree, because I personally can't get enough of this stuff. I'm, you know, listening to the This Week in Virology in my spare time and things like that to try and get my brain around this. Let me ask you, Chris, getting back to the sort of virology 101 we were talking about earlier. Can we just talk about, do vaccines typically, and again, we don't know with the Omicron variant how it might affect the vaccines that we already have, many of us already have in our bodies, but do vaccines typically need to be updated as viruses evolve? I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of other, you know, vaccines that have been, you know, polio, for example, right? I'm not hearing typically that there's, needs for a lot of formula changes there. But then I guess we've eliminated polio for the most part. But go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the best sort of like comparator here is the influenza virus vaccine, you know, that we're updating every year. And so from the very beginning, it's been clear that at some point, we're probably going to have to update the coronavirus vaccine in the way that we do for the flu vaccine. Once it's, you know, basically been circulating and established in the human population, it's going to have to evolve to keep replicating in people who've either been previously infected or vaccinated. And that will necessitate us sort of generating and taking up updated vaccines. The big question has been kind of how often are we going to have to do this? And I was pretty optimistic that we wouldn't have to do an update for a while, just because of how effective the mRNA vaccines and the J&J vaccine and the mRNA vaccines have been compared to the flu vaccines. But the Omicron variant is suggesting that we have to that it may be coming sooner rather than later. If we find that this virus, this new variant, really is changed enough that it does warrant updating the vaccines, then we're going to have to do that. But yes, this is an ongoing challenge with viruses, with some viruses, like you pointed out, influenza being a really good example, where you have this virus that's continuously evolving, and we have to kind of keep running to keep up with it.
Is there an idea that maybe eventually the virus will sort of settle, you know, stop, calm down a little bit? I mean, we have coronaviruses out there that are the common cold, right? I mean, is it possible that if it's more transmissible, or maybe you want to say it's more fit, but it could also become less severe over time, right? I mean, you think of the best evolutionary path for a virus. It doesn't want to kill the hosts, but it does want to spread.
Right. Well, so I think that kind of prediction about viruses evolving to become less or more virulent or more, you know, sort of cause more or less severe disease is really unpredictable. What it is totally predictable, and what I think you can say with absolute certainty, is at some point, everyone in the community is going to have immunity against this virus, either ideally through vaccination, because that's the lowest risk way of establishing protective immunity against these viruses, or because they've been infected, or both. At that point, you know, our bodies are all going to have this protective immune response that means that when we get infected in the future, even if the virus has evolved to some extent, we're still going to be protected. And the odds of it being a severe infection are going to be way lower than they were during the, you know, pre-vaccination days. And that's exactly what we see with flu, where in many years in the past, 1968, 1957, 1918, we had this new influenza virus come into the human population, cause a lot of suffering and death, and then sort of convert from a pandemic virus into a seasonal virus as people develop protection against it. And almost certainly we're going to see the same thing with COVID-19 over the next year or two.
Okay, just about a minute left in our conversation. Last thing I want to ask you about is vaccines and, you know, I guess you'd say vaccine inequity. South Africa and other countries in Africa got about a 6-month, what's the opposite of a head start? They were 6 months behind because so many Western countries were sort of hoarding their vaccine supplies. Now there's talk of a lot of hesitation in other places. Can you just talk about the relationship between the sort of rise of variants in places where there is less access to vaccines?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so the potential for new variants to evolve is basically directly proportional to how many infection cases we're seeing, right? Every new infection is an opportunity for the virus to change a little bit and to potentially become more transmissible. And so the fewer cases you have around the globe, the fewer chances there are for new variants to emerge. And so the faster that we can get the entire world vaccinated, the more quickly we're going to get to a point where we don't have these new variants of concern coming up every few months. And I think as has been said many times, the viruses don't really respect borders. And so it really illustrates how things that are, public health, the public health situation on the other side of the globe can come back and directly affect us here in Illinois in a very profound way. And so we have to really view getting vaccines out to other countries in the world that don't have them as, regardless of how important you think it is from a moral standpoint.
Sure.
It's also in our own best interest to do this.
Chris Brook, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.